Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Yud Alef and Aleph, three lines down. Here the Gemara is continuing with the Memrot of the Amoraim, describing how they began their learning with regards to Megillat Esther. See, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Patach La Pitcha Laha Parsha Tomi Hocha. When he began to discuss the Megillah, he used to open with this Pasuk, Hirkavta Enosh the Roshenu, Banu Ba'esh Ubamayim. So you brought upon us man, they were dominant over us, and we went through fire and water. Be'esh, when did we go through fire? Is Bivei Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. Ubamayim, when did we go through the water? Bimei Paro. V'totzienu l'rvaya, Bimei Haman. And then you took us out to sweetness and salvation in the time of Haman. That's the continuation of the Pasuk. So these are different periods of time in which Bnei Yisrael find themselves under dominion of the foreign nations and persecuted by them. In the time of Nebuchadnezzar, we know that Nebuchadnezzar throws them and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into the Kivshan HaEsh. Time of Paro, he throws the people into the water. And in the time of Haman, we were at risk, but Hashem brings us to a time of abundance and success after the defeat of Haman. Rabbi Yochanan patach la pitcha la haparsha tamihacha. Zachar chasdo ve'emunato levet Yisrael. Ra'u kolaf se'aretz et yeshuat elokeinu. Eimatai ra'u kolaf se'aretz et yeshuat elokeinu. When did all the corners of the earth, everyone, see the salvation of God? So Hashem remembered his chesed, his goodness, and his faith towards Bnei Yisrael. And all the peoples of the earth saw our salvation through God. When did this happen? Bimei Mordechai ve'Esther. In the time of Mordechai and Esther, because it's all public. It's all through the letters that are sent out. And it's very obvious that Mordechai overturns the rule of Haman, and that the Jews were saved from the hands of their enemies. Rish Lakish patach la pitcha la haparsha tamihacha. He used to begin with this pasuk. Ari nohem v'dov shokeg Moshe Rasha alamdal. So the lion roars, the bear growls, and the evil one rules over the impoverished nation. Ari Noheim, who is the lion that roars, Zeh Nebuchadnezzar Rasha, Dichtiv Bei, because it says about him in Yirmiyahu, Allah Aryeh Misubecho, that the lion arises from its thicket or from its den, referring to Nebuchadnezzar Bavel, who's going to come and destroy Eretz Yisrael and destroy the Mikdash. Dov Shokeg, Zeh Achashverosh, the bear growls, that is Achashverosh, Dichtiv Bei, because it says in the vision of Daniel, Varu Cheva Achari, and then there was another animal, Tinyana, the second one, Damiyal Dov, that looked like a bear. And in the vision of Daniel, the bear represents the Malchut Paras, Umadai refers to the Persians. Betani Rav Yosef, Elu Parsim, the Dov or the bear references the Persians, Shochlim Veshotim Kedov, they didn't drink like bears, Umasur Balim Basar Kedov, and they have layers and layers of fat like the bear. Megadlin Seyar Kedov, and they grow hair like the bear. So this is the way that he described the Persians as being similar to bears in their conduct and in the way their appearance was. Bein lahem menucha kedov, and similar to a bear, they never have any rest. Moshal Rashaz, who is the ruler, the evil ruler, Zehaman. Alam dal, over the impoverished nation, Elu Yisrael, Shem Dalim min ha-mitzvot. That's over Bnei Yisrael, who are impoverished from the mitzvot. I mean, what led to Haman's ascension and possible annihilation of Bnei Yisrael, which is the fact that they were Dalim min ha-mitzvot. They had let go of the mitzvot. They had stopped practicing the mitzvot and keeping the Torah. Rav Elazar patach la pitcha la parsha tamihocha used to open with this pasuk, Ba'atzaltayim imach ha-mikare, with slothfulness, imach ha-mikare, the roofer will become impoverished, or the roof will collapse. U'b'shiflut yadayim yitlof ha-bayit. And with the laziness or idleness of one's hands, the house will leak. B'shvil atzlut sheyah lahem l'Yisrael, because of the laziness of Bnei Yisrael, shelo asku b'torah, because they did not engage in Torah, and assess on Osho HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mach. The enemy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was made poor or impoverished. It's a Lashon Sogi Nohor. So no, it doesn't mean literally the enemy, but rather Bnei Yisrael. the beloved of Hashem were made impoverished, that Hashem wasn't able to defend them because they were not learning Torah. Bein mach el ani, and a mach means someone who's impoverished, shenemar v'machu me'erkecha. That's in the Parsha of Arachim, someone who can't afford to pay what he had promised. In Arachim, it says, v'machu me'erkecha. If he is less value or less assets than what he is supposed to pay. Vein mikarel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the roofer is only referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, we saw this in the Gemara and Tanit, hamikare b'mayim aliyotav, that he roofs his aliyot, his attics, or his upper chambers with water. He used to open with this pasuk, Shir Malot, Lulei Hashem Sheyalanu. If it were not for the fact that Hashem was with us, Yomar Na Yisrael, Yisrael would say, Lulei Hashem Sheyalanu Bikum Aleinu Adam. Were not for Hashem being with us, when a man stands up against us, comes to attack us. Adam Velo Melech, a person and not a king. Who was a person who attacked us or tried to annihilate us who's not a king? That refers to Haman. Rava Patach Lapit Cholai Pashut HaMeocha, he would start with this. Birvot Tzadikim Yismach HaAm. When the Tzadikim, the righteous, are granted the authority, the people rejoice. Im Shol Rasha, but when the rulership goes to the evil, Yanach HaAm, the people will mourn or they will sigh. Birvot Tzadikim Yismach HaAm, Ze Mordechai VeEsther. That refers to Mordechai and Esther, Dichtiv. Vahir Shushan Tzala VeTzamecha. So that there was rejoicing, partying over the ascension of Mordechai and Esther and their rulership, because they were the Birvot Tzadikim Yismach HaAm. On the other hand, Bimshol Rasha Yanach HaAm, that when the evil one is given the rule, then the people will mourn and sigh, Zehamat, Dichtiv, Ayir Shushan Navocha, that at the ascension of Haman and the decree of Haman, Ayir Shushan Navocha. Vavatna Amar Mihocha, Vavatna says from here. Now, here there's not so much explanation as to what the reasoning is. It just gives you a pasuk and says, Ki mi goy gadol, asher lo ukim krovim alav, b'chol kareinu elav. There's, what other nation has a God who's so close to them, who can be reached, or who we can call to whenever, wherever we are. Whenever and wherever we are, we can call out to him. So the way the Marsha explains this is that Haman makes a claim in the Megillah that Bnei Yisrael are am mifuzar mifurad. They're a nation that is dispersed and spread out amongst the entirety of the nation or the empire of Achashverosh. So how could it be that they are kimi gadol asher lo lukim krovim elav? That God is so close to them, they're dispersed. How could God be close to them? So the answer is, b'chol kareinu elav. Wherever we call to him, Hashem is with us. And that Hashem is b'chol makom, that there is no place without Hashem. And so he misunderstood b'chol krovim elav to mean that they have to be united in a single location. But the truth is that Hashem can be with a Jew wherever they are. Vashi Amar Mihocha, and again from the similar psukim there in Dvarim, Oin Esad Elukim. So there the pasuk tells us, did anybody or did any god ever try to take a nation out from amongst another nation? It's a reference to Yitziat Mitzrayim and unique circumstances surrounding Yitziat Mitzrayim, which makes it that there is no god like our God. So here the Marsha again says that it's a comparison to Yitziat Mitzrayim. Just like by Yitziat Mitzrayim, Hashem punished the Mitzrayim midah keneg midah. They tried to hurt Bnei Yisrael with the water, and Hashem turns it on them, and then they are killed in the water. So too by Haman, he intended to annihilate and wipe out Bnei Yisrael. And on that same day, he and his children and his descendants were wiped out on that very same day. So midah keneg midah, Hashem comes to save the nation and to take, in a sense, a nation out of another nation. So to hear in the Machut HaChashverosh, he saves the Jews from amongst the entire empire. Right, more subtle. I think that we might have mentioned this before, but there is the connection of Mismach Gula to Gula, the idea of juxtaposing the Gulat Purim to Gulat Mitzrayim, and the reason given why we should make Adar Sheni, the real Adar, and the Adar in which Purim is celebrated because of this Mismach Gula to Gula is exactly that message. That the Gula mi Mitzrayim, which is a Nes Galui, and the Gula from Purim, which is a Nes Nistar, the two of them are both the Gulat Hashem. And so we have to see in the Nes Nistar of Purim, we have to see the Otot Moftim that are found in Yitziat Mitzrayim. Right? Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's clear, like Yitziat Mitzrayim, but sometimes it's a Nes Nistar in Purim, but that's no less of a Nes, and that's no less of a miracle, and that's no less of an Otot Moftim. Just that we have to search for it, we can't say that the nishtana hateva, that there's an obvious change in the nature of the world, but there are things that are miraculous, but miraculous from the side of Nes Nistar. So I think the comparison to Yetziat Mitzrayim is apropos. Again, it's not in the same vein. You're right. That doesn't have otot, moftim, and all the things that are associated with it. But that's exactly the message, that we need to see those otot moftim inside of the Nes Nistar and the redemption in Purim. All right, so the next part here, it's not clear exactly how the girsa should flow. I'm just going to read it the way we have it in our Gemara, which is Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. Amarav, what is Vayhi? It's a contraction of the word Vay, which is like woe. Vayhi is like mourning. So woe and mourning came to the Jews, Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, on the time of Achashverosh. Now here, it probably shouldn't say Hadar Duchtiv, but rather this is another example of these ideas, because it's mitzkayim, masha ketuv b'Torah, this brings forth or proves what's written in the Torah, v'itmakartem shem lo'ivecha l'avadim l'shvachot, that you'll be sold for slaves and maidservants to your enemies when you are put into the exile. U'shmol amar, lo me'astim v'lo ge'altim l'chalutam. So I did not reject them, I did not despise them, in order to wipe them out. Lo ma'astim bimei Yevanim. I did not despise them in the time of the Yevanim. V'glo ge'altim bimei Nebuchadnezzar. And I did not reject them in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the Chalutam, to wipe them out, bimei Haman. Each of these statements is that Hashem stood up for us, and He did not allow us to be taken away. So in the time of Yevanim, the time of Chanukah, of the Chashmonaim, Hashem did not forget us. He stood up for us. Time of Nebuchadnezzar, he also stood up for us. Even though the destruction took place, eventually we are redeemed from the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. And the Chalutam is Bimei Haman, that he wanted to annihilate us, and Hashem comes to our rescue. Lafer Briti Utam, I did not annul the covenant I have with them. Bimei Parsim, that was in the time of the Persians. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, Bimei Gog Umagog. And that will be in the future. In the time of Gog and Magog, Hashem will not forget us. He will stand by our side and protect us. All right, next. Umatnita Tana, in the bright we have it, Lo mastim bimei kasdim. So I did not despise them, reject them in the time of the kasdim, that's the Babylonians. Shemati lahem Daniel, because I gave them Daniel to help them out. Hananya, Mishael, v'Azariah. And the Nevi'im, Hananya, Mishael, v'Azariah. V'lo ge'altim bimei Yevanim. And I did not reject them in the time of the Yevanim, she'amati lehem Shimon HaTzadik, because they had Shimon HaTzadik v'chashmonai uvanav, the chashmonaim and their children, u'matatiyahu kohen gadol. So I gave you people who will be your salvation, people who will be your leaders to take you out of these difficulties, the chalutam b'mei Haman, she'amati lehem Mordechai v'Esther. That was, I put in place Mordechai and Esther to rescue them, lafer b'tigitam b'mei Parsim. The time of the Persian, she'amati lehem shebeit Rabbi v'chachmei Dorot. Because at that time we had the house of Rabbi and the other great Talmidei Chachamim to lead us through these difficult times. So at the same time you have Roman rule over Eretz Yisrael, you have the Persian rule over the areas of where the people in Bavel live. I mean, Rabbi is only one. Rabbi's in Eretz Yisrael, but he says, and all the other Chachamim. The Tanaim are generally centered in Eretz Yisrael, but it means while the Persian rule is still going on, you have the Greeks, then you have the Romans, but the Persian rule still extends over Bavel. And so we, under that Persian rule, we still survive because of other Chachamim that we had during that period of time. And Rabbi is just an example of the Chachamim. He's not the only one, he's just an example of the Chachamim of that period of time. Ki'ani Hashem l'kochem latid lavo. That's for the future. She'ein koluma v'lashon yuchola lishlot behem. That the Jews will never be able to be completely wiped out or overtaken by any other nation. No other nation will be able to completely rule over them. That they will have that promise from Hashem, and that's because Hashem is always with us. Levi Amar Mihacha, Vim lo torishu et yoshvei haaretz. So that's in Bamidbar Lamed Gimel, in describing the requirement of Bnei Israel to conquer the land and to take over the land. It's this week's parsha. It says there that if you do not wipe out the inhabitants of the land, then they will be there, the Sikkim. They will cause problems for you. There'll be thorns in your side, and they will continue to be issues for you. So the way Rashi explains it here is that was the problem, that Shaul, by not wiping out Agag, Melech Amalek, and the entire Amaleki nation, left a residual, which was then a thorn in the side of Bnei Israel in the time of Haman. Because Agag was not totally wiped out or conquered, that remnant of Amalek comes back to haunt the Jews in the time of Haman. So again, these are all openings for their discussion regarding Megillat Esther, and these are the psukim that they use. Rabbi Chiya Amar Mihocha, Vahiya Kasher Demiti Lasot Lahem Eselachem, which is actually the next pasuk in, if you don't wipe out these nations, and you don't take care of them, you leave the Avodah Zarah, and you don't do as I say, then, Kasher Demiti Lasot Lahem, what I plan to do to them, meaning the enemy, Eselachem, I will do to you. Which is, in the time of Achashverosh, the time of Haman, that Hashem wants to annihilate the Jews, not the enemy, because they did not take care of Agag Melech Amalek many years before. Right now the Gemara moves on to Achashverosh, Achashverosh's name. What is the derivation or the play on Achashverosh's name? Amrav, Achiv Shorosh. He was the brother of the head. Uben Gilo Shorosh. He is the same mazel. He's unborn under the same constellation, the same zodiac as the Rosh. Achiv Shorosh. Now Rosh here references Nebuchadnezzar. So he's cut of the same cloth as Nebuchadnezzar. He's the brother of the Rosh. Achiv Shor Nebuchadnezzar Rashash Nikra Rosh. He's called the Rosh Shenemar Antu Resha Didhava. Daniel, in his speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, in the end, describes what he is going to be granted as the king. And he says, you will be the head, the golden head of everything. So you see that he's called Resha, he's called the Rosh, Nebuchadnezzar. Ben Gilo Shorosh, who were Rag, who became Shlarog. So what does that mean, Ben Gilo? He's of the same mazel. And in the Rashi here says that they were of the same mindset, same mind frame. I mean, that they came from the same type of they were driven by the same things, which is Nebuchadnezzar killed the Jews. Achashverosh wanted to kill the Jews. Hu echriv. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Hu bikesh lachriv. And Achashverosh wanted to destroy the Mikdash. Because we have here Shenemar in Ezra, it says Machut Achashverosh b'tchila Malchuto, at the beginning of his reign. They write a Satan. Here comes the word Satan. They wrote a letter in order to convince the king to say that the Jews are rebelling and that you need to quell the Jewish rebellion in Yehuda. You have to stop them from building the Mikdash and from building Yerushalayim. And the Targum in the beginning of Megillat Esther says that Achashverosh actually stopped the Binyan Beit HaMikdash. This is Alpi Chazal's reckoning that Koresh came before Achashverosh. When Koresh is the one who grants permission to the Jews to return to Yerushalayim, they begin the construction of the Mikdash. But that's only completed in the reign of Daryovish Hasheni, according to Chazal, which comes after Achashverosh. And the building of the Mikdash is suspended by Achashverosh for the 14-year rule of Achashverosh, according to Chazal. And so that's what they're saying over here, that Achashverosh was just like Nebuchadnezzar. He wanted to destroy or stop the building of the Mikdash. Shmuel Amar, that Achashverosh comes from Shehushkaru Pnayam Shel Yisrael B'yamav Kishuleak Dera. The faces of Bnei Yisrael were blackened like the bottom of the pot, right? The pot that gets touched by the fire and is left with a black soot on it. So too, the faces of Bnei Yisrael turned black in his time because they were going to be annihilated. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, where does Achashverosh come from? Kol Shezochro. Anyone who mentions his name, Amar, Ach the Rosho. Says, woe is my head. What a headache that gives me. Thinking about Achashverosh. Again, a contraction of words, a play on the name Achashverosh. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Shekol Nase Rashim, Nasu Rashim B'yamav. The reason Achashverosh comes from the word Rash, which is everybody was made poor in his time, Shneamar. Esem HaMelech Achashverosh Mas, that he puts a taxation on the people, which causes them to be impoverished. Right now, we're going to have a flow through the Megillah. What the Gemara is going to do here is go through the Psukim and Megillat Esther. Here in the beginning, it's slower and it goes through word by word, but for the next number of Dapim, we're going to dash in the Psukim of the Megillah. So then Megillah says, Hu Achashverosh. What does the Hu mean? He is Achashverosh. Hu Berisho Mitchilato Ve'ad Sofo. He was evil from beginning to end. And the Gemara brings other examples of that same reading of Hu. Hu Esav. What does it mean? Hu Esav? Hu Berisho Mitchilato Ve'ad Sofo. He was evil from beginning to end. Hu Datan Ve'aviram. Datan v'Aviram were evil from beginning to end, especially based on the Midrash Chazal, that many of the altercations that Moshe has throughout his life are with Datan v'Aviram. It's not just by Adat Korach that we meet them, but they were also involved in other altercations. Hu HaMelech Achaz, who berisho mitklato et sofo, the Melech Achaz, who was evil from beginning to end. Avram, who Avraham, it's a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, who Avraham is who betzidko mitklato ve et sofo, he was righteous from beginning to end. Who Aaron, who Moshe, hein betzidkan mitklatan ve sofan. Same thing, the who Aaron and Moshe, that's written in Parshat Vaera, says that Moshe and Aaron were tzadikim from beginning to end. The David, who Akatan, David was the youngster, he was the youngest of the brothers, who bekatnuto mitchilato v'atzofo. He remained the small one from beginning to end. Kishem shebekatnuto ikdin atzmo. Just like in his youth, he kept himself small, etza mishagadol mimenu b'Torah, by someone else who was greater than him in Torah. Kach b'machuto, even though he ascended to the throne, and he was the king, adayin ikdin atzmo etza mishagadol mimenu b'chokhmah. He still made himself small next to someone who was greater than him in Chachmah and in Torah. Now the Gemara darshins the next word, Hamolech. What does it mean, Hamolech? Amarav, Shemalach Me'atzmo. That he ruled of his own accord. Amri lo l'shevach, Rami lo l'gnai. Some say that is a positive statement, some say that's a negative statement. Amri lo l'shevach, Dolo havi inish, Dechashu the Malka Gavate. What does it mean that he, Malach Me'atzmo, that he rose to be the king because there was nobody else worthy to be the king? He was the most worthy individual to be the king. Rami lo l'gnai, some say it in a negative form. Dolo v'chazi l'machuta. He was not appropriate to be the king. He was not ra'ui to be the king. Ela, that he paid for it. Umumona yiterehu di'oyv v'kam. He bribed them until he became the king. So that's what it means. Malach mi'atzmo. He ruled of his own volition because he paid to rule. Then the next continuation of the Agarat is mehodu v'ad kush. The Melech Chashverosh ruled from Hodu ad Kush. Rav Shmuel, Chanamar Hodu b'sof ha'olam v'kush b'sof ha'olam. One of them says that Hodu is at one end of the world, Kush is at the other end of the world, meaning that his empire ran or extended from Hodu and Kush, from one end to the other end. V'chanamar Hodu v'kush gabe adod yavu. One of them says that Hodu and Kush were neighboring cities or neighboring areas, havikaimi, or neighboring countries. Kishem, shemalach Hodu v'kush. Just like he could rule with an iron fist over Hodu v'Kush, because they were close by, approximate, kach malach misof olam atzofo, so too his empire was ruled over him in a complete way. Ki Yosef b'davar ta'omer, a similar type of understanding or machloget we have with regards to Shlomo Melech. Ki hu roder b'chol Eiver Anar mitifsach v'raza. That he ruled over Eiver Anar, the other side of the river, meaning over the Yarden, Mitivsach v'adaza, until Aza, mentioned in today's daf, obviously topical. Rav Shmuel Chanamar Tivsach b'sof ha'olam, v'aza b'sof ha'olam. The Tivsach's on one end of the world, Aza's on the other end of the world, in a similar way, Shlomo HaMelech's empire extended from one end of the world to the other. Chanamar Tivsach v'aza v'adaya dodi yavu gaimi. They are actually areas that are adjacent. K'shem shel Malach al Tivsach v'aza, just like he had control over these because they were close by, kach Malach al kolom kolo, so to he ruled over the entire world. And now continuing to darshan the pasuk, Sheva v'esrim u'mea midina. He had 127 countries or areas, regions that were under him. Amrav Chista, b'tchila Malach al Sheva, in the beginning he ruled over 7. Sof Malach al esrim, then he expanded his empire to rule over 20. Sof Malach al mea, then after that he rules over 100. If that's the way you're going to darshan it, what are you going to do with this pasuk? 7, 30, and 100. How are you going to darshan that? My darash tovei. What drasha do you have there? It says shani hocha dekrai yiteru. It's an additional pasuk, an unnecessary, superfluous pasuk. Michtei k'tiv. It says that he ruled mihodu vad kush. Sheva esrim imei midina lomali. So if he ruled mihodu kush, that's over everything. Why do I care that there's 127 midinot? So, I mean, now the drosha must be there for a drosha, and therefore we're doreshit. It's a little surprising, given that the fact that the midrashim darshan with regards to chayei sarah, they do exactly that. They darshan this the exact same way. They take the units, the tens, and then the hundreds, and they use that as a drosha to equate between them. So I'm not sure why they couldn't do that with chayei amram as well, and keep up the same drosha, which doesn't seem to be so far-fetched, given what we do with sarah's years, as well as what they were trying to do here, with regards to the Medinot Achashverosh. Right, so that's a good question. When they say here that he first ruled over 7, then over 20, then over 100, is that incremental or is that cumulative? Right, you could read it either way. You could read it that he ruled over 7 at first, and then he ruled over 20. 20 could be cumulative number that he's ruling over, or it could be the incremental. He ruled over an additional 20. And then the hundred is the same thing. You could say the hundred is the total on the amount, or you could say that it's the incremental amount. And obviously, if you want to say 127, then you would have to say that each of these numbers is an incremental amount, not the cumulative amount. All right, Tanu Rabbanan, Shlosha Malchu B'Kippah. Three individuals rule over the entire world. Kippah here means under the entire Kippah Tarakia. Tosafot already raises the question. We know of a fourth one. He says, how come here they don't mention Alexander Mokdon, Alexander the Macedonian, Alexander the Great? So here it says, Mishum Delari Hacha Elabotan Aktuvim Lehejo. Says here we're only dealing with things that are mentioned in the Psukim. Alexander the Great, what's not mentioned in the Psukim, because he's post the canon, post the Tanakh. So therefore, he's not mentioned here in the Gemara. The Gemara here is only discussing the kings that ruled over the entire world that we find in the Psukim. So here the Gemara gives, who are those three? Ve'elohein, Achav, Achashverosh, Ve'Nebuchadnezzar. Or, if you want to keep them chronologically, it's Achav, Nebuchadnezzar, and Achashverosh. Achav, Tzichtiv, how do we know that Achav ruled over the entire world? Because it says, Chai Hashem Elokecha, Miesh Goy, Umam Lecha, Shalosh, Shalach, Adonai, Sham, Levakeshka. So this is Ovadiah talking to Eliyahu when Eliyahu all of a sudden appears to Ovadiah. And Ovadiah says, I take a shvua. If my Achav sent me throughout the entire world looking for you, and I couldn't find you. So as Rashi points out, how could he take a shvua that he went everywhere in the world under the kingdom and he didn't find Eliyahu? So it must be that Achav's malchut extended over the whole world, and that's why he could take such a shvua. If he didn't rule over all these areas, how could he possibly swear? Nebuchadnezzar, dichtiv, vaya hagoy v'amacha ashalu itein et savro b'ol melech bavel. Because it says that, Yirmiyahu says, basically, any nation that does not submit to the rule of Melech Bavel will then be destroyed or conquered. Basically, Melech Bavel is going to rule over the entire world. Achashverosh hadamar. Achashverosh is what we said already above, which was Mihodu v'yad Kush. That he ruled Mihodu v'yad Kush, which was from one end of the world to the other end of the world. Gemara now questions, Betuleka, are there no more that ruled over the entire world? Vayika Shlomo Melech. What about Shlomo Melech, who rules over? We just saw that by Tifsach and Azza. He has that same derosho that we had by Hodu Akush for Achashverosh. It says, Lo Salik Malchutei. He did not complete his reign. He was deposed as the king based on the Gemara and Gitin that the shade took over and threw him out from being the king because of the problems that arose in his Malchut that are mentioned in Tanakh. So Gemara says, Anich Laman Damar Melech Vehejot. That works well according to one who says that he was first a king and then he was deposed and became a layperson. Alaman damar melech ve'jotu melech, that he was a king, deposed, became a layperson, then returned to be the king, ma'ikah lememar, then he did finish out his kingdom. When it says, Shlomo miltach rita havabei, Shlomo has something else, meaning that he has something else unusual, which is, shemalach alayunim ve'ala tachtonim. He ruled over that which is above and below. Yes, he ruled over the entire world, but that would not be enough to describe Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech has much more than that, because he rules over the alayunim, shenemar, v'yeshu Shlomo al kisei Hashem. Shlomo sits on the throne of God. So Kisei Hashem makes it sound like he is, as if, he's acting in place of Hashem. So he's ruling over the Elyonim as well. Right, it says, Vahava Sancheriv. What about Sancheriv, who ruled over the whole world? Dichtiv. Mi b'chol Elohei ha'aretzot ha'ilu. Asher yitzilu et atzam miyadi. Who from all the gods of these lands has saved themselves from my hand? I mean, that basically, I've kicked everyone out. I've ruled over everybody. I've won all the battles. There are no gods that have stopped me. Gemara says, but there is one thing that he couldn't get to. Ahavo Yerushalayim delok vasha. There was Yerushalayim that he didn't conquer. Right? That's the famous story where he leads siege to Yerushalayim. And then Hashem, overnight, kills out the entire sieging nation in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Vayika Daryovish. What about Daryovish? Darius, who rules over the entire world. Dichtiv. Daryovish Malko, Ktav l'chol amamaya, umaya v'lishnaya. Writes to all the nations, peoples, and languages. Didarin b'chol ara, that live amongst the whole world. Shlamchon yas yizge. It's written with the sin in the Tanakh, but it is Shlamchon. Your peace should be with you, or there should be abundant peace with you. So Gemara says, with regards to Daryovish, ha-havyo sheva d'lo malach alayu. There are seven areas that he does not rule over, dichtiv. Because it says there in the same parak in Daniel, shvar kadam Daryovish, if so please Daryovish, ve-ha-im al-malchuta And therefore he places or establishes on his kingdom la'achashdrapanaya me'avesrim, satraps of 120. So here the Gemara is contrasting that with Achashverosh, who had 127. Over here, Dayovish only has 120 satraps, or people that rule under him. And that's for 120 out of the 127. Vayikra Koresh. What about the fact that Cyrus ruled over the whole world? Because it says in the first perek of Ezra, Ko Amar Koresh Melech Paras. This is what Koresh, the king of Persia, says, Ko Melechot Aretz Natan Li Hashem. Hashem has granted me all the lands. Hatam, Gemara says, you can't trust that, because he's speaking about himself. It's one thing when the narrative of the Nach speaks about an individual and says he rules over the whole world, or he rules over a large area. So that's one thing, because that's an objective statement about the rulership of the individual. Over here, this is Koresh giving a speech about himself. So he aggrandizes his empire and says that I'm ruling over the whole world. But that is not necessarily true or objectively true. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, "Bayamim ahim kishevet ha-melech." At that time, when the king, whether the question is here, kishevet ha-melech is when he is seated, or kishevet ha-melech when he is now calm. And it says right afterwards, "Bishnat shalosh l'malchuto," in the third year of his kingdom. Why does it take 3 years before kishevet ha-melech? Why isn't a kishevet ha-melech once he is appointed or anointed as the king? So Amar Rava, my kishevet, acharshi nityashva dato, after he felt at peace or at ease. Why is that? So here comes the calculation of the 70 years of Galut Bavel. Amar, he says, Belshazzar chishevet ta'a. Belshazzar tried to calculate the 70 years of Galut Bavel and made a mistake. Ana chashiv navloteina. I'm going to do the calculation, not make the same mistake he did. Mahi, what is this calculation that they did that was problematic? Tichtiv. It says in Yirmiyahu, ki lefi melot lebavel shivim shana efkodetchem. When you have fulfilled the 70 years in Bavel, efkodetchem, I will redeem you. Uchtiv in Daniel, it says, lemalot lechavot Yerushalayim shiv shana. Once there are 70 years that are completed from the destruction of Yerushalayim. So Chashov, this is the calculation that Belshazzar did. So just to have a little history here, Nebuchadnezzar is the first king of Bavel. He rises out of the destruction of Ashur. Bavel conquers Ashur, who is the superpower of the time, in Nineveh. And then he takes over, goes on to take over the entire world, as we saw before. Nebuchadnezzar rules over the entire world. So he's the first king of Bavel. The second king of Bavel is Evil-Merodach. And the third one is his grandson, Belshazzar. So this is the calculation that Belshazzar did. 45 to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar rules for 45 years. V'esrim v'tlat de'evil merodach. And 23 years of el merodach. V'tarte didi. And there are now two of mine. So you take the 45 of Nebuchadnezzar, add that to the 23 of evil merodach. That turns out to be 68. Two more from my reign, Belshazzar says. And now I have hashivim. This is the 70 years that he spoke about, because it says in the Pasuk, with regards to the 70 years, that is counted, l'mlot Bavel, when you fill out Bavel, making it sound from the ascension of Bavel as a superpower. At that point in time, you count 70 years, and that's when the Jews will be returned. And that's exactly what Belshazzar did. He calculated 70 years from the beginning of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. So, apik mani d'be migdasha, says that's it, the Jews aren't going to be redeemed anymore. So next year, meaning that in his third year of his reign, he takes out the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, Vishtamishbo, and he uses them. Because now he felt that the Jews weren't going back, so now I can take all of those things that were taken into captivity, I can use them in my own palace. I'm not going to get punished. The Jews are done. Now, the Nebuchadnezzar min alon darbim v'chamesh shnin malach. How do we know that Nebuchadnezzar rules for 45 years? Damamar, because we have a memra. Galu b'sheva, galu b'shmona. Galu b'shmona asre, galu b'chasre. They were put into Galut in the 7th year and the 8th year, and the 18th year and the 19th year. And what the Gemara explains here is those are synonymous. The 7th and 8th year are synonymous, and so are the 18th and 19th year. They're just counting from a different point in time. Galut b'sheva the kibush Yoyakim. They are put into Galut after 7 years of the conquest of Yoyakim by Nebuchadnezzar. Galut Yoyachin, that is when the Galut of Yoyachin begins. Shishmona le Nebuchadnezzar, which is the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar. So what basically happens is that Nebuchadnezzar conquers Nineveh. That's the beginning of the rule of Malchut Bavel. A year later, he conquers Yoyakim in Yerushalayim, and now Eretz Yisrael becomes a vassal state to Nebuchadnezzar, and he leaves Yoyakim there as a vassal king. And the way Rashi is explaining this is based on Seder Olam Rabbah. For 3 years, Yoyakim remains as the vassal king, and then he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar. And according to Seder Olam Rabbah, he rebels for 3 years. So there is 6 years before Yoyakim is sent into Galut. That's the way Rashi calculates it. Somewhat of a problem because there are actually 7 years you have to come up with here. Rashi only describes in this 6 years and not the seventh year. So what you have to suggest over here is that Yoyakim's rule was actually a little longer than the actual 6 years. It was 6 years plus. Or there are some who say that Nebuchadnezzar first takes Yoyakim to Bavel for a year and then brings him back and makes him into the vassal king in Yerushalayim. After Yoyakim is killed in the rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar appoints Yoyachin, his son, in his place. He goes back to Bavel and he gets some advice from his advisors who say, if the father rebelled against you, why would you put the son as the king? So he goes back and he takes Yoyachin into Galut and he removes him as the king after 3 months of rule. And then they appoint Sidkiyahu, his uncle, I mean Yoyachin's uncle, Yoyakim's brother, as the king. And Sidkiyahu remains the king until he finally rebels, and he is the king when the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed 11 years later. So now, what the Gemara is saying here is, Galut b'sheva l'kibush Yoyakim. Galut Yoyachin. When Nebuchadnezzar comes back and puts Yoyachin into Galut, remember that Mordechai in the Megillah is part of Galut Yechonia. That's part of the Galut of Yoyachin. Whether he was actually part of Galut Yoyachin or he is from amongst the descendants of those that were in Galut Yoyachin has to do with when you think the Megillah is set. Whether you think it's set within the 70 years of Galut Bavel, if you think it's set much later, then obviously it would be harder to argue that Mordechai was actually part of the Galut Yoyachin or Yechonia. But the Galut Yoyachin, where after the death of Yoyakim, Yoyachin rules for 3 months and then put into Galut, and part of Bnei Israel was sent into Galut at that point in time, that is 7 years after Yoyakim was conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, 8 years after Nebuchadnezzar rose to power. Because remember, Nebuchadnezzar becomes the king who rises to power over Babel in the year prior to conquering of Yoyakim. So it's 7 years from his conquest of Yoyakim, but it's 8 years from the beginning of his rule. Galut b'shmanasre the kibush Yoyakim, Galut Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu, meaning the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the Chorban HaBayit, and the exile of the people in the time of Tzidkiyahu, which is 11 years later, that is in the 18th year of kibush Yoyakim. That's in 18th year after Nebuchadnezzar conquers Yoyakim, which is the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's rule. Damar, mar, because here we have the statement, shana rishona kibush Nineveh. In the first year, Nebuchadnezzar conquers Nineveh, the capital of Ashur. Shnia kivish Yoyakim. And in the second year, he conquers Yoyakim over Yehuda. Uchtiv. And then it says in the Pasuk, Vayhi b'shloshim v'sheva shana da galut Yoyakim. 37 years after the galut of Yoyakim, Malach Yehuda b'shneim asar chodesh b'esrim, I'm sorry, Melech Yehuda b'shneim asar chodesh b'esrim v'chamisha lechodesh nasa evel merodach Malach Bavel. Bishnat Malchuto, et Rosh Yoyachin, Melech Yehuda, v'yotzei oto mibet kela. He takes him out of the prison, meaning that Evel Merodach comes to become the ruler of Bavel, and as he rises to be the ruler of Bavel, he takes Yoyachin out of prison. So when does he take Yoyachin after prison? 38 years after he's been put in prison by Nebuchadnezzar. Well, that means that if Evel Merodach is already the king, 38 years after Yoyachin's put into prison, we know that Yoyachin's put into prison in the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's rule. So that means for 37 years, Yoyachin sits in prison under Nebuchadnezzar, plus the 8 years that he ruled before Yoyachin's put into prison. That's 45 years. And that gives you the reign of Nebuchadnezzar at 45 years. So that means in the 46th year, that's when Evel Merodach takes him out of the prison. So that's what the Gemara says here. If you take that, you say, Tamne v'tlatin v'sheva, 8 plus 37, hare arbaim v'chamesh. That's the 45 in Muchanetzah. V'srimetat Evo Merodach. How do we know Evo Merodach ruled for 23 years? That Gemara says Gemara. That we have a Masorah for. Meaning that we don't have any evidence in the Psukim. We just have a Masorah that he ruled for 23 years. V'tarti Didei. And then two of Belshazzar Hashivin. That's how you get to the 70 years. Amar Hashta Vadei Tu Lo Mefarke. Says, now the Jews are definitely not going to be redeemed because 70 years passed and Hashem didn't keep his word. Apek Mani Debe Migdusha. He took out the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, Vishtamishbu, and he utilized them. Hainu Dekarmele Daniel. This is what Daniel says to him. Ve'al Marei Shmaya. Marei in the Tanakh is spelled with an Aleph, but it means the same thing. Al Marei Shmaya. Over the Master of the Heavens. Hitromamto. You raised yourself above him. Unmayedi Vaite Haitiv Kadamach. And the utensils of his house you brought before you. So there Belshazzar is using the utensils of the Mikdash, the utensils of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dave. It says later in that perek, a number of psukim later, it says, Beleliak til Belshazzar malka kazda'a. On that night, Belshazzar the king dies. Uchtiv. And what happens next? It's the beginning of the next perek in Daniel. V'daryevish mada'a kabel machuta kvashnin shitin v'tartin. Daryovish, Darius the Median, then rises to power when he's around 62 years old. So here you have Belshazzar making the calculation as to when the 70 years are up, because you see here that that's the end of the rule of Babel. And all of a sudden, at that point, you have the beginning of Daryovish, or the Median Empire. So he says, Amar Ihu, Achashverosh says, Ihu mitatoi, he made a mistake. I'm going to make the calculation, not make a mistake. Mikitiv the Machut Bavel. It doesn't say that you start counting the 70 years from the kingdom or the reign of Bavel, meaning from the beginning of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. It says Libavel Ktiv. My Libavel, the Galut Bavel, from the beginning of Galut Bavel. Well, when's the beginning of Galut Bavel? That's at the time of Yoyachin. So Kama Bitziran Tamne. That's 8 years. I mean, 8 years after the beginning of the rule of Nebuchadnezzar, Yoyachin is put into Galut. So now I have to come up with an additional 8 years. So what is it? Chashiv al chilufayu. So now he puts in, he takes 8 years out of the beginning, and now he's got to add them on to the end. Chada de Belshazzar, 1 year of Belshazzar, meaning that Belshazzar rules for 3 years. He says after his second year, into his third year, he already calculated that that's the time that he could party, and he dies in that party. V'chamesh de Daryavish v'koresh. And then you have 5 years between Darius and Cyrus. And then v'tarte didei. And then two of his own, meaning two into the Machut HaChashverosh, HaShivin, that's the 70 years. Came into Chazi de Malu Shivin, Vlo Yifruch, since he saw already that they had full 70 years and they were not redeemed, Amar Hashta Vade Tulo Mefarke, says they're not going to be redeemed anymore. Apik Mane, the Beit Mikdash, he took out the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, Vishtamish Bohu, and he used them. So that's what do you mean, Ishtamish Bohu? That is what we say in the Megillah, V'Kelim Mikelim Shonim. So the Kelim Mikelim Shonim are from the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. So then, Basatan, Viriked, Benehem. So what happened? What was the punishment for that? That he was wrong? All of a sudden, the Sokan came and danced amongst them, Varagat Vashti, and killed Vashti. And that's why Vashti gets killed in that party. So the Gemara says, Vashaper Choshiv. He says, he made a good calculation. Achashverosh seems to have done a pretty good calculation. What's wrong with his calculation? Now, just to note, we mentioned this in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. These are long dapim. I don't want to spend too much time on this issue. But here, Chazal say with regards to Koresh and Daryovish that they are only ruling for 5 years between the two of them, which is a very short time and is very unlikely in terms of what we know historically about the Persian rule and the Persian monarchs to have them rule only 5 years prior to Achashverosh. Doesn't seem to make too much sense, but that's what Chazal conclude based on Seder Mabo from the Psukim in Ezra. And trying to reconcile them, that they put this together, that these are the years that add up to 5 years, which between Daryovish, Amadi, and Koresh, that they have 5 years between them. So now the Gemara says, okay, so he made a mistake. So, Iyinami Mitaytoi, Dibale Mimne Mechorvot Yerushalayim. He made a mistake because he began to count from Galut Bavel, but that's not the beginning of the 70 years. The beginning of the 70 years is actually from the destruction of Yerushalayim, means at the time of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, which is actually 11 years later. So, Kama B'tziran, how many you're missing now? You're missing Chadisar. You're missing Chadisar. You're missing 11 years. So, Ihu Kama Malach, how long is Achashverosh the king? He's the king for 14 years. We know that because, first of all, the Megillah begins in the third year of his reign. So you start with that. Then in addition to that, we know that Bishnat Shtemisre, he pila pur. In the 12th year of his reign, that's when Haman makes the pur. And the pur falls out in the following year. The following year is the 13th year of his reign. That's when Purim actually takes place. The Jews defend themselves. And then in the Megillah, Mordechai sends out letters to be Mikayim Purim the year afterwards. So that brings you into the 14th year of Ahasuerus' reign. So Gemara says, if you're up to the third year of his reign, you had already reached the point where it was 70 years from Galut Bavel, then if you add on 11 years, that means in the 14th year of Melech HaShverosh, that should have been in the time when the redemption takes place. So Gemara says, Ba'abasar Didei, Ebaile de Mivnei Beit HaMikdash. In the 14th year of HaShverosh's rule, that's when the Beit HaMikdash should be rebuilt. Halam Aktiv. How come it's written there, Ba'adin B'teilat Abidat Beit HaLokad de Yerushalayim, that the workage on the Mikdash in Yerushalayim was stopped, was not in force? So it only begins in the time of Doyovish, who Chazal indicate is Doyovish Hasheni, Darius II, who according to Chazal is actually the child of Ahasuerus and Esther. And he's the one who allows them to begin building, and he actually only allows them to begin building in the second year of his reign. So we're actually missing 2 years here. So how do we figure out where are those 2 years that are missing? Because the calculation of the 70 years should have fallen out in the 14th year of Ahasuerus' reign. Instead, it falls out in the second year of Daryovish, who comes after Ahasuerus. So Amarova, Shanim Mikutao Tabu. There is some double counting in here. Remember that the way that we work with the rules of kings is that if a king rules in a year, even a portion of the year, that year counts towards his reign. So if the passing king rules in halfway into the year or any amount of time into the year, that counts as a year towards his reign. And the ascendant king, the king who now takes over at that point, that also counts as the first year of his reign. So there's actually some double counting of the reigns. And that's what it says, Shanim Mikutot Havu, and Tanya Namiochi, that we have another brayta that supports that, which is, V'od Shana Acheret LeBavel, V'amad Daryovish V'Hishlima. There was another year under the rule of Bavel that was overlapping that caused this. So you actually have two times that there's overlapping. One of them is between Koresh and Daryovish. As Rashi says, there are only 4 years between them, not really 5 years. The 5 years really comes from double counting. Both of them have an additional year that's counted there, but it's an overlapping year between their reign. And the same thing is true by Nebuchadnezzar and Evil Merodach, that there's an overlapping year at that point in time. And that leaves you with two overlapping years there. And you have to make up for those 2 years. Those 2 years are made up by the fact that only in the second year of Daryovish do they begin building the Beit HaMikdash. Gemara says here, Amarova, Af Daniel to Abba Haychushbana. Even Daniel made a mistake in this counting in the 70 years. How do we know that? It says, B'shana Achat, the Malko, in the first year of his reign, Ani Daniel, Binoti Basfarim. I was meditating over the books. So here the Gemara says, not Basfarim, but from the word Safar, to count, on the count. And Damar Binoti, he says that I meditated over it, Mechal Data. He didn't get it right. He only meditated over it, but he didn't get it right. The Gemara says, Mikom Makom, Kashu Kray Adoti. What are you doing with the Pasuk between Yirmiyahu and Daniel? Because in Yirmiyahu it says, Melot the Bavel, the time that you finish with Bavel. Uchtiv, and with the Daniel it says, L'chorvot Yerushalayim, to the destruction of Yerushalayim. So when is the count of the 70 years? So Amar Rava, Rava says, L'pkida be'alma. There's a difference. There are actually two redemptions to B'nai Yisrael. There's a Pekida ba'alma. Pekida ba'alma means they get a slight redemption, that Hashem then takes them out. And then the full building of the Beit HaMikdash and the full return of the people only takes place later. And that is the Melot Bavel. That is in the 70 years. So the 70 years actually turn out to be in the time of Koresh. Remember that Belshazzar calculated the 70 years, and his 70 years were actually Melot Bavel, were actually correct. He got the calculation correct. Except that there was an overlapping year that he forgot about, that overlapping year between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Evil Merodach. And therefore, 1 year later, after his rule, after he dies, when Koresh takes over, Koresh gives permission for the people to return to Eretz Yisrael and to begin the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. That's Rubavel going back to Eretz Yisrael. So that's Bekida. That actually happens at the time of Melot Bavel. Then the Chorvot Yerushalayim is only 11 years later, at the time of Daryovish Hasheni, At that point in time, are they granted the right to go back and rebuild fully the Beit HaMikdash? It's more than 11 years here. It's 18 years later that they are granted that right. And that you have the 4 years of Koresh and Daryavish, you have the 14 years of Achashverosh, which is the 18 years, and then the two into Daryavish, and then again, we have the overlapping years, so it cuts it down. So those are the 18 years or 19-year difference that takes place, and that's in the time of Daryavish Hasheni, when they finally complete, or actually begin, the construction of the Mikdash to complete it. So that's what it means, that there actually will be two redemptions. There'll be an earlier redemption, which is the beginning of the process of the redemption, and then there'll be completion in the time of Daryavish Hasheni. V'hainu dichtiv, and that is what meant by the pasuk, by Koresh, it says, Ko amar Koresh, melech paras. This is what Koresh, the king of Persia, says, Ko mamlechot aretz, natan li Hashem elokei Hashemayim, all the lands, Hashem and the kingdoms, Hashem has granted me amongst the earth. Remember, we saw this before, that he was boasting about his rulership. Elokei Hashemayim, the God of heavens, v'hu pakad alai livnot lo bayit b'Yerushalayim. And he has charged me with the building of his house in Yerushalayim, asher b'Yehuda. It's in Yehuda. So first of all, they use the word pakad. So that's what it means, pakida ba'alma. That in Melot the Mavel, there will be a pakida ba'alma, and that's in the first year of Koresh. So then, based on that, Dorosh of Nachman bar Yechista, Ma'idechti, what is meant in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu? Ko amar Hashem lemishicho de Koresh, asher chzakti b'mino. This is what Hashem says to, the way that the Pashtuta Pasuk reads is that, L'mishicho l'Koresh, to the anointed one Koresh, asher chazakti b'mino, that I get empowered in his right hand, meaning that I give him the power to do what he needs to do. So there it's calling Koresh the Mashiach. And when it says, V'hi Koresh Mashiach haya? Since when is Koresh the Redeemer? Since when is he the Mashiach? Alamar Koresh Boach hu l'Mashiach. The Gemara reparses the Pasuk to read like this. Ko amar Hashem lemishicho, comma, the Koresh asher chazakti b'yimino, the Koresh who I strengthened in his right hand. So amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Mashiach, kovel ani lechal Koresh. I'm complaining to you about Koresh. Ani amarti yuvne beiti. I told him he should build my house v'yikabetz galyutai. He'll bring together gather the exiles. V'hu amar, and it's a continuation of the pasuk in Ezra that we just read. Mi bachem mikolamo. He Elukavimo, that who is here amongst you from his people of God? He Elukavimo, God should be with him. But Yaldi Yerushalayim Asher B'Yehuda, let them go up to Yerushalayim and Yehuda. Vivene Beit Hashem Elokei Yisrael, they will build the house of Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Who Elokim Asher B'Yerushalayim? He is the king or the God over Yerushalayim. So what does Koresh do instead? He makes Bnei Yisrael's proxies to go build the Beit HaMikdash. So that's what it says. Mi bachem mikolamo vayal. That he complains. Hashem said that I made him, the person, to go build Asher Pakad. I commanded him to build the Mikdash. He should have been more involved. Either that means that he should be more involved from the standpoint that he should have made sure the people leave and forced them, pushed them to leave. Not just say whoever volunteers to go should go. Or from the possibility that he himself should have gone up there and built it or had to make sure that it was built rather than sending people to be his proxies to build it. So that's Hashem's complaint about it. Rashi actually notes that the trup on the psukim in Yeshayahu support the understanding of Chazal here. It says, Ko amar Hashem lemishicho da Koresh. On top of Mishicho is a Zarka, and on top of the Koresh is also a Zarka. He says, if it was supposed to be that it was Ko amar Hashem lemishicho da Koresh, that's the way to read the Pasuk. It should have been a Zarka on Mishicho and a Segol on Koresh. The fact that it makes it a Zarka on Mishicho and a Zarka on Koresh tells you that there's a pause in between and that they're separate. So it's Ko amar Hashem lemishicho. And then the Koresh is shared exactly by Yemino, which means that Hashem is speaking to the Mashiach about Koresh, not that Koresh himself is the Mashiach. From here we see that we have the 70 years, two sets of 70 years, one set of 70 years, which is in the time of Koresh, when they begin the process of the redemption, meaning that Zubavel goes up and they have the Aliyah Rishonah, Teretz Yisrael, to begin the construction of Mikdash, which is later stopped. And then the people who are left in Eretz Yisrael at that time turn out to have a very difficult time, both from a physical existence, from a economic existence, as well as a religious existence. Because we know by the time that Ezra and Nehemiah get there at later times, these people are mostly intermarried. They're not keeping Shabbos. They're very difficult times for the Jews there. But they come up in the second end of the 70 years, in the 70 years that falls in the time of Daryavish Hasheni, when then finally the Beit HaMikdash, or the completion of the Beit HaMikdash starts, and that's when the final point, or the threshold of redemption begins when the Mikdash is going to be built and finished off. So that's that third set of 70 years. We had here three sets of 70 years. 70 years calculated by Belshazzar, by Achashvej Rosh, and then the proper count of the 70 years. The Gemara in the end says there are two sets of 70 years, the one that Belshazzar calculated, and the one that we say in the end is the proper one, and each of those result in a certain amount of redemption that transpires. Again, I'll just reiterate that this is all according to Seder Olam Rabba, who believes that the Persian rule was condensed based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we saw, and this is where we discussed it, that three of those kings are considered to be one. Who Koresh, who Daryovish, who Artaxasta. That Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes are all considered to be one king. Now, Chazal are right in the fact that these are not private names. These are names like Parol that are granted to the kings, but they make them all into one big king. And it's true also that in the Persian Empire, there were some, what are called co-rulers, joint rulers, and they do have this idea of joint rulers. But nevertheless, it's very difficult because we have pretty well-documented secular history that indicates that the extent of the Persian rule is much more or much longer than Chazal state over here. According to Chazal's calculation, the story of Purim takes place about 34 years before the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, if you follow the account of the secular historians, depending who you think is Achashverosh, I mean that they've been associated with different of the Persian kings, you know, there are three different options as to which of the Persian kings people think is Achashverosh, then it would be anywhere from 50 to 130 years after the Binyan HaBayit, after the Mikdash is already rebuilt, that's when the story of Purim takes place. And again, there's been a lot written about this, why that is the case. Rav Schwab, who writes about it and says Chazal intentionally did it in order to be Chosem the Ketz, in order to make it that it wouldn't be clear that the Ketz is coming. There are others who suggest that it was a quote-unquote cover-up of the fact that it's an embarrassment for Klal Yisrael that the Mikdash is standing in Yerushalayim, and they're in Shushan HaBirah pretending that that's the capital, and that the King Achashverosh is the king, and that the Beit HaMikdash is his palace, and so on and so forth, which is, it's a tremendous criticism or musar to those people who didn't come on Aliyah, didn't come to Eretz Yisrael when the Beit HaMikdash is standing and Eretz Yisrael is rebuilt. And so again, that would be it's a difficult statement about the nature of when Purim takes place and the meaning of Megillat Esther versus the story that's written about Jews in Galut Bavel and Hashem has saved them even when they're in Galut Bavel. Has a very, very different flavor or taste to it. Again, in terms of reconciliation between the enumeration of Chazal and the enumeration of the historians, there are generally three approaches to that. One is to say that the historians are right, Chazal were wrong. The other way is to say Chazal are right, the historians are wrong. And there are others who try to reconcile between them, or figure out that Chazal knew, but they intentionally didn't do it, or Chazal knew, but they had other reasons to override that, because they wanted certain things to work out, or certain things to be at certain times, based on their calculations. So anyway, there's been much written about it. I just want to make sure that we at least mention it here, because it's definitely important to the story here, and the calculations of the 70 years. Okay, we're going to stop over here.